Welcome to But For Real, a variety show podcast co-hosted by two therapists who also happen to be loudmouth feminists. I'm Valerie, your resident elder millennial child-free cat lady.
And I'm Emerson, your resident chronically online Gen Z brat. And on the show, we'll serve up a new episode every other week that will take you on a wild ride through the cultural zeitgeist, mental health, and beyond.
You'll definitely laugh and TBH sometimes maybe cry a little because this is a silly and serious show.
Buckle up, my friends, and let's get into today's episode.
Hi, guys.
Like, where are we? New setup.
Oh, my God. Yes. For those of you watching on YouTube, we are sitting on a couch, formerly known as the couch in one of our therapy offices. Had a leg break, so now it is legless. She has been fully amputated, and she is now a floor couch, and we're just giving it a try.
And trust me and Valerie to walk in and be like, this is ours now.
we're going to
make a whole setup. We're going to have an LED light that says, but for real.
Oh, yes, we are.
This is where we're going to film forever.
God.
Love it. Well, funny hypothetical question to kick us off, because, like, our topic is fun and interesting today. So, specifically, if you were a stage hypnotist, what would your trick be? What would you have in the bag to just crowd please?
And I struggled so hard with this.
I know.
Did I have to brainstorm with Greta? Yes, I did. But here's the idea that I chose.
Okay.
All that she came up with.
I would love to know.
The cosmic yoga fail.
Oh.
So every time I would say inhale, all of my volunteers who are hypnotized would strike a random yoga pose at warp speed. Hopefully not get injured.
Sure.
And the funny thing to me would be, like, let's say there's some people who don't do yoga. What the fuck are they going to do? They're going to do something.
They're just like.
What about you?
So I always do this. I ask the funny question and then I'm like, what's my answer? I honestly think that I would be like, I would be on a cruise. I can't tell you why, but I would be on a cruise. I'd be a cruise ship hypnotist.
Cruise hypnotist?
A hypnotist? Yes. Well, yes. So I would be scanning and I would be finding every young woman that has a terrible boyfriend.
I love this.
And I would be like, yes. Yeah. Because there's always going to be like 3 to 4 per evening.
Yeah.
Someone just has a terrible boyfriend. He doesn't want to participate. So I think I would honestly just be like, and bitch alakazam, and then they would jump overboard. But they wouldn't die. I'm not homicidal.
Wait, the boyfriend jumps overboard?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, not the girl. Like, no, the girls are staying. The boys can go.
Is a life raft just immediately following them?
And a raft picks them up, and then it takes them to this island where we never have to see them ever again. And upon entering, they all get, like, those Britney Spears t-shirts that say, like, dump him. And so they have to, like, wear them.
And they're basically their little, what was the Ken Village called?
Like, oh,
Ken's, like, Casa
Dojo. Oh, Mojo Dojo Casa. They're, like, wearing those fuck-ass fur coats.
Oh, my God.
I just can't. Yeah, get rid of the men. Okay.
Male listeners, we love you. Because if you're listening
You
are not one of those horrible boyfriends.
No. And if you are and you're listening, that's kind of a mindfuck. So stick around, I guess.
Now it's time for our first segment, Tea and Crumpets, where we tell you what we can't stop talking about this week.
Oh my God. Okay. And now it's time for our Tea and Crumpets, where we tell you what we cannot shut up about recently.
Mm-hmm.
And mine is this girly on YouTube who does dance cardio workouts. She calls a lot of them HIIT, like dance HIIT.
Yeah.
It's not really true HIIT. So you're not doing planks, you're not doing burpees, you're not doing shit like that.
Well, thank God.
You are just kind of bouncing around, maybe doing some little lunges, whatever.
Okay.
But it's very dancey. It's to the beat. You learn a few new moves for each song. You get breaks in the middle. Like, it's lovely.
That's really fun.
Yeah, and she uses popular music.
God.
So she can't put ads in those, or she doesn't make money from those videos.
Sure.
Those ads. But they're so good. Like, I just did, she did, like, a early 2000s Disney kid one. She's got,
oh my God, I need to do
They're so good. It might be that I voluntold the leadership team the other day on our team retreat that we were going to do
one of them.
They were like, why did you do this to us?
No, like, it's, Val,
it's really fun. It's really fun. And she's awesome. Her name's Emily, and she's M-E-M-K Fit on YouTube.
Oh, you know, the Disney one sold me. I'm doing it.
I can't wait to hear about
it. I'm going to do it, and I'll tell you. Okay. I couldn't think. I'm like, what do I like lately? But I've been getting, I got this cat eye manicure. Can you see that?
Is that gel or what is it?
Okay, so I did dip.
At the salon.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I got dip first, which is like, you know, the powder. You dip your little thingies in there. And then she was like, for $15 extra, you can have this. And I was like,
upsell me, baby.
Upsell me, mama. I'll take it. I have a terrible time with saying no. Like, so pretty. So, like, for anyone that doesn't, like, know the lore, I guess, very popular, very trendy right now. But, like, I don't give a fuck. I'm a girl.
I think there's even nail polish that does this.
Yes. So, this, so I had dip, and then she painted gel on the top. So, you still cure it under, like, a lamp. But then she takes this little... I say she because my nail girl is a she. Takes this little magnet and then she was just like holding it here, here, here. And it was just like moving the little glitter around. And I was like, this is fucking magical. I was like, whoa.
I was talking to someone recently about how, you know how like the new AirPods have that, like, I don't know exactly how it works, but it has this like translation feature.
Yes.
Right? Where you can be like, someone speaking our Vietnamese salon girlies are in for it.
Oh, girl.
We're finally going to know what they're saying.
Well,
not only Vietnamese. A lot of them are Vietnamese. But,
oh, sure.
Know,
especially
different countries,
in
et cetera. Like, you know, girls, we can be listening, finally. So we're going to hear what you're saying about us. And do we deserve it? Whatever you're saying? Probably.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Well, and I'm just thinking, think of just like, canonically, like the worst Karen that you can ever think of at the salon being like, I hate what you fucking said about me. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I probably would talk shit about you too.
Right. Karen's, just please don't wear them.
No. They're, if you're Karen, they're not for you.
No, you don't need to know what they're saying.
Get them out of your Black Friday wish list. You're not getting them for Christmas. You're done.
Now it's time for Step Into My Office, where you get advice from your favorite professionally qualified, personally peculiar therapist.
Let's get into a little bit of Step Into My Office, where we read listener submissions, give a little bit of advice because we can't, you know, do it in the day job. So let's see what we have for this week. Dear Em and Val, I've been curious about hypnosis for a while, so I decided to try some hypnosis videos on YouTube. But literally nothing happens. Mm. Everyone in the comments is like, I felt my soul leave my body. And I'm over here blinking aggressively and wondering if I left the dryer running. The person in the video was saying, you're floating on a soft cloud. And I'm like, no, ma'am. I'm sitting upright on my IKEA couch with a dog who's attempting to lick my elbows. I keep waiting for that magical moment when I suddenly drop into the trance and feel all calm and melty, but instead I'm just hyper aware of how loud I swallow and how much my brain refuses to cooperate. Does this mean I'm just not hypnotizable? Like, did I fail the vibe check of the subconscious mind? Is there something wrong with me if I can't, quote, go under? Or is this one of those things where it's supposed to feel way more subtle than the movies actually make it seem? Sincerely, the overlord of overthinking. What are your thoughts?
Oh, man. First of all, relatable.
Honey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I always do wonder sometimes about, like, those people who are just like, oh, my God, like, this was transcendent.
Right.
I'm like, was it? Were you also on mushrooms when you did this?
Well, yes. Psilocybin's in the chat.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, and not to minimize, like, I have had, if not transcendent, like, you know, impactful moments when doing some sort of, like, hypnosis,
breath work.
Yeah. Breath work is the new hot trendy thing.
Mm-mm.
You know, is it supposed to be like that every time? No. Are you only benefiting from it if it feels like that? No.
No.
So I think that it is so individualized. And one of the things that, like, we, you know, talk about at our training is we can't even necessarily say, like, and your legs are feeling very heavy, because maybe for some people when they go into trance, they feel really light.
Yes.
So it's knowing that it's whatever that individualized experience is for you, the more you can relax into, this is what's, you know, what's happening is what's supposed to be happening. I'm meeting what is.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. I even that part of like heaviness and lightness, that's something that over more time I've practiced with clients where the first couple of times we're doing trance, I'm like, what does relaxation mean? Is it light? Is it heavy? Is it a space in between? And so many people are like, yeah, it's both. Like, the bottom part of my body is heavy, but, like, my brain feels light. Or it's all feeling heavy. It's so different for every single person. And to the piece of, like, maybe I'm just not hypnotizable. Babe, it's a spectrum.
Totally.
Some people deeply experience deep trance, give or take, 9 times out of 10 that they're doing trance work. I've still had really great experiences when I've been in lighter trance myself, or when I've been with clients that are like not super in, but again, we're still opening up for suggestions and the brain is still activated in that space. Work can still be done. You don't have to be conked out on the couch to feel like it's doing something. So I do think that's part of like the stage hypnosis where you snap a finger and someone drops forward. Right. It's like, babe, it's not like that not 9 times out of 10.
Drama.
No. So also it's like, hey, you're doing stuff on YouTube. Maybe that's just not your method.
Sure.
That's okay too.
Yeah, because there's something about like, and we'll, you know, obviously we'll get more into this later, but like some people really need the experience to be customized to them and individualized. And that's where working one-on-one with a practitioner, they can ask you all the specific questions in kind of the setup part to where once you're in, and people vary in terms of how much they dialogue with, you know, how much a practitioner like wants the person to be speaking versus kind of staying in silence. But either way, if they've elicited that information from you, they can be providing so much more of an individualized, personalized kind of thing that might just resonate more for you than what you're going to find on YouTube.
Totally. Yeah, listener, try some, like, different options. Like, go give it a try in person with someone if you want. Or, I don't know, are you watching the same videos? That person might not be the one for you. Or what they're eliciting, it doesn't resonate with you. That's okay. It doesn't mean that it's not for you.
Totally.
So keep open.
And now it's time for the DSM. In our DSM, all varieties of dysfunction, spiraling, and meltdowns are welcome. In this segment, we break down complicated concepts and common misconceptions about mental health, well-being, and tell you what we really think.
So, obviously, we are rabbit-holing it today. Mm-hmm. Woo, woo, woo.
Thank you.
You're
welcome.
I was
transported.
Wait, is that a new induction?
Yeah.
Act weird as fuck.
Hey, that's a great way to market myself.
I mean, seriously, listeners, you think that I'm making this shit up. No, there are literally inductions that are designed around just lemon jello, you know, pocket window.
My eye is twitching. When we were at our training, Akira was doing whatever.
Masterful.
And I was like,
yeah. You're just saying things that sort of confuse the conscious mind. And they're just like, what's happening right now?
Very word salad vibes. But it does. I'm susceptible to that for sure.
That salad.
Oh, yeah.
So what the actual fuck is hypnosis?
Well, yes.
And we will use the terms clinical hypnosis, hypnotherapy, hypnosis relatively interchangeably here because we are not talking about stage hypnosis in this context. So hypnosis is really just a natural, focused, absorbed state of attention. So it's that sort of concentration, which is, it is sort of like a paradox, right?
Because
it's sort of like, you know, I'm thinking of like the candle flame. Like I'm so focused on that, but because I'm so focused on that, the rest of my attention is sort of fuzzy and melty. And so it is this weird kind of paradox in that way. So during hypnosis, your brain actually shifts into a state that's a lot like deep meditation, that kind of liminal just before a sleep state. You're just in that alpha theta brainwave. And that really is the sweet spot for focused attention, creativity, decreased mental chatter from our lovely prefrontal cortex. So that part of your brain is that sort of inner planner, critic, logic, you know, the thinking part, right? That is often just, I often say like the kind of the fire hydrant that's just like spouting in your ear constantly, right? So if that part sort of chills out, it's not that it goes offline. It just sort of calms down. Like if, you know, I'm holding my hand up vertically, right? And if I just sort of bend my fingers to where it's like, okay, the part of my hand is still upright, but I'm able to sort of bypass and not only be met with that sort of conscious mind, thinking brain. That's there, but I can also sort of get past it into more of the subconscious mind. So you're not like asleep, as the myth sort of often goes. You're not like completely out of it and, you know, won't recall what happens. You're just highly relaxed and highly focused at the same time.
Yes.
Your brain's a little quieter. Your brain is more receptive to whatever. And, you know, that's why, of course, ethical practice is so important, because if we know that we're more suggestible and receptive, this is the time we want to be giving it all the good stuff. So everyone goes in and out of trance states daily. Like,
can't stress that enough.
So often, like, you lose your keys. Like, who's the one that set your keys over there? You were. You just forgot because you were in probably somewhat of a light trance state when you did it.
Oh, yeah.
Movies, TV shows. This is where I'm like, I used to question whether I was really hypnotizable. Sure. And then I'm like, girl, you would not be so distressed watching this show that is clearly your conscious mind knows that it's not real. These are not real people. These things did not really happen. And yet, how distressed am I about what is happening to these characters? I am in a state of trance.
Yes.
Right?
Activated. Yeah. I drove here this morning multiple times. I was like, hello.
Where is she?
What am I doing?
Staying in your lane the whole time. Right?
Doing the speed limit. I'm, you know, not crashing into anyone or anything crazy, but I'm just like, oh. So some of this contrasts with like pop culture versus like the reality of this work. Okay. So most, 9 times out of 10, we have a hypnosis client. They come in and they're like, what does this actually mean? Like, what are you? And I always, part of my pre-talk is just like, you at no point will be running around this room clucking like a chicken.
Right.
And if so, like, report me to my supervisor, because what do you mean?
If so, you must have told me that's what you wanted.
Right, because girl, what? So stage hypnosis is, it's grounded in entertainment.
Yeah.
And I never want the conversation to steer that like stage hypnosis is bad,
right.
Always unethical, always blah, blah, blah. It's not. It's funny as fuck.
There's
some of it's really fun, but it is grounded in entertainment, not like a therapeutic intervention or we're looking at those goals. So this is relying on suggestible volunteers, a little bit of social pressure, hence the cruise ship of it all. And just, you know, like the showmanship.
Yeah.
And like, that's fine. Mm. Give or take, you know, some people say like, oh yeah, I was hypnotized once on a cruise. And yeah, I think it worked. Because I was, like, doing the things that they told me to do. And I was like, well, sure.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, you're in an audience that is watching you. You know, like, there's certainly those elements that go into that
piece. Have you ever actually seen stage hypnosis?
No.
Because I haven't either. I've seen several mentalists
who
are really great, where it's, like, they are somehow eliciting information in a very covert way, then that blows my mind too,
sure,
it's very similar overlap, but then they're just, you know, like, oh, I know this is the place that you went or whatever.
Interesting.
So I've seen that type of thing, but I've not seen like where someone actually like induces someone into a trance. So we need to put that on our bucket list. We'll find somewhere
and go. So yeah, there's that kind of entertainment piece. Then we kind of come into like clinical therapeutic hypnosis, also called hypnotherapy. This is very interchangeable. So this is intentional. This is ethical, because if you're a practicing practitioner, you are bound by some ethical board. So we're not having you cluck like a chicken, run around crazy. This is a very collaborative process, and I think can be shorter or longer term work. So I have hypnosis clients where maybe they came in for something specific, but then we've expanded into childhood memories or this relationship or their relationship with themselves or whatever. And then we kind of have more of like the coaching side. And so you totally feel free to chime in any points with this. But to me, feels very like empowerment oriented, skills forward, you know, often using guided trance or scripts. And in the hypnosis world, there's kind of like an interesting hot take with scripts, I guess, and how you do that. A lot of visualizations, but a lot of time, like shorter term, a lot shorter term. And a lot of the times you'll see for weight loss or smoking cessation or, you know, very like specific things. And not all the time. This is not like a one size fits all. But for me, I associate that kind of, you know, more coaching-esque realm. I think of Melissa Tears, where she's like, who is very beloved in the hypnosis world, but she's a very, very popular coach. And I did my first training of hypnosis under like her program or whatever. But she's having people come in and she's direct and she's doing it. And then you're out. You're out of her office in 5 to 10 whatever sessions.
She's like, I've heard enough
of
your story.
And shut up.
We're gonna jump right in.
Yep. She's very direct, which scares me the house down boots. But yeah, there's just like some, those are just some of the differences. And of course, there's so much overlap. More specifically, what is hypnotherapy? It's just the therapeutic application of hypnosis. Right. There's not, you know, much crazy to it, but this is used to access those inner resources. This can feel quite EMDR or brain spotting coded. Yeah. I say that they are sisters.
Oh, yeah.
So we're looking at those inner resources or parts of self. We're shifting patterns. We're learning to kind of regulate our physiology, reduce your anxiety, rework any kind of internal narratives, improving habits. Mm-hmm. So again, this is working by lowering that critical mind noise, lowering that, you know, the hush-hush of the prefrontal cortex. We're increasing openness to just new internal experiences. Hypnosis pairs really beautifully with IFS or parts work because you're just rooting around in there anyways. So you go and find somebody or something. Mm-hmm. And really strengthening that mind-body integration. I think as someone that's neurodivergent, one of the things that I love the most about hypnosis within myself as a neurodivergent person, but taking that with majority of my caseload, which is neurodiverse people, is helping bridge that interoception gap a little bit where a lot of autistic people or ADHDers really struggle with dropping from the brain down into the body. And I'm a historic intellectualizer. I keep up here. So it's been really nice to do hypnosis work with myself to build that body connection a little bit better, which has really served me well as a clinician and as someone that works with, you know, folks. And so it's really, really cool work. So yeah, go into more of like the different uses.
Yeah. So personal use, and this is like the kind of, you know, our listener on YouTube, where you can very much do self-guided. There are some people, and there's controversy around this too, as there are most things, where it's like, if you have something that's like a high conviction statement, you're going to have some people who agree with it, and you're going to have other people who are like, that's absolutely false. Yeah. So the idea that like, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. Mm-hmm. You'll have some people who are like, yes, because the thing that's working about it is what the client is doing themselves. But then you'll have some people who are like, yeah, that's actually not really true. Because, like, you know, we are facilitating an experience, and what the clinician does or doesn't do does make an impact, right? Mm-hmm. But all that to say, self-hypnosis as sort of a, you know, subcategory of hypnosis or hypnotherapy has been proven to be effective for various things.
Yes.
Again, I would say like collect your own data of like, give it a try. You know, what is the thing that you're trying to work on? Is it getting to sleep? Is it feeling more confident before you're going and giving presentations? Mm-hmm. Is it moderating pain?
Yeah.
And so whatever your thing is, if you want to try self-hypnosis, there are a million YouTube videos. There are courses that you can take even on specific issues like sleep or pain. There are books on those topics related to self-hypnosis. So you can find, you know, scripts. Of course, if you're doing scripts, like you might as well either just listen to a recording, or maybe you customize your own script and record it yourself and mm-hmm. use that for self-hypnosis. So, you know, and of course, integrating breath work, integrating other things like guided imagery, affirmations, embedded in trance. Oh my God. I was just thinking about, I had a day last week where I slept really poorly and I had like a very, very big day the next day.
Yeah.
And I can sometimes just like power through, you know, but I was like not able to type.
Yeah.
I was like, my brain feels like a toddler. What the fuck am I going to do? Yeah. You know? And so I kind of pulled out all the stops. I canceled one session so I could like try to force myself to lay down and go to sleep. And even though I wasn't able to sleep that long, I slept for maybe 15 minutes, and then I woke up and I said, you know, I'm going to do an NSDR practice. Mm. So non-sleep deep relaxation, very similar to yoga nidra. It's all hypnosis, people.
Oh, EMDR, yeah.
It's all brain's body. It's all hypnosis, right?
All roads lead back to hypnosis.
Exactly. That should be the name of the pod.
Yes.
So anyway, I was doing the NSDR, and then lo and behold, my Aura Ring, instead of saying that I napped for 15 minutes, it said I napped for like an hour.
Wow.
Because I guess my brain, my heart rate, like all dropped. That just went into that during that NSDR practice. So that was really cool. And then I was like, okay, I got a little bit more time. I did a power walk with some affirmation like music. And then I found, I was like, I'm just going to search up like, you know, high energy affirmations on YouTube, I found this thing called Virtual Energy Drink. And it said subliminal messages. Now, I don't know, because it was mostly like, imagine that you're floating through space and there's like sparkles in it. And it just says something about energy on the screen. So I don't know if the subliminals were like visual that I didn't see, or if they were coming through the loud music. But let me tell you guys, it's 3.5 minutes long. Search virtual energy drink. And if you need to bang up your energy in 3 minutes, of course, the comments are hilarious. People are like, I set this as my alarm. And people are like, I listened to this for 7 hours straight as I was studying. I was like, Jesus.
That's so intense.
But I know. So all kinds of ways that you can utilize lots of tools available to you.
Yes.
For self-hypnosis. And then, of course, as you were kind of starting to introduce earlier, in a clinical setting, this is where it gets really interesting because, you know, define clinical, right?
Yes.
Like, are we talking psychotherapy because, or you know, in a medical setting? Because there mm-hmm. are licensed clinicians like us, or licensed or certified medical providers who are also trained in hypnosis and will use that in their work.
Yes.
And then, you know, then it just sort of like often weaves in and out with their other kind of approaches based on whatever it is you're wanting to work on, whether that's anxiety, trauma work, phobias, preparing for childbirth, IBS or other medical conditions with like mind-body elements, chronic pain, insomnia. So lots of things that relate to the body, the nervous system. And then the boundaries with that to consider are, it's not necessarily a standalone treatment for severe trauma.
No.
It can be integrated as part of the overall treatment plan, mm-hmm. but we want to make sure that we're addressing. So for instance, even in EMDR, the whole 8-phase protocol of EMDR sort of addresses that, right?
Yes.
Because if we were to jump straight into hypnosis focused on sort of processing and releasing a memory, that would be like jumping straight into phase 3 of EMDR. Mm. So we need that kind of stabilization, resourcing work up front before we're jumping into like, let's get into your pain. And that's part of where I see like shifting into the coaching setting. We'll do a whole episode one day. Did we do one yet? No.
Of coaching like versus therapy. Yeah. No, but it's on my list.
Yeah, of coaching. And I always say hashtag not all coaches. I even got the Instagram account in case I want to use it someday. But, but you know, not all coaches are doing this, but there's kind of a trend in the coaching world that it's like, we're doing deep inner child hypno breath work and come and release all of your pent up pain and limiting beliefs. I'm just so good, right?
That was good, but your eye contact was really freaking me out. I was like, oh my God.
I'm looking right into your
soul. Into my soul.
It works, Emerson.
I'm too autistic.
Oh my God. So yes, there are a scope of practice issues where some coaches working with hypnosis are like probably going a little deeper, quote unquote, than where they should be. So the goal there is really like, there's so much that you can do. Focusing on goals, motivation, confidence, energy, identity work, habit change. I recently bought this little bundle of audio activations from this coach, Leancia. I don't know where she's based in the UK, but she has got this like thick
accent.
It's not like you're like London, you know, it's a very thick accent. Ooh. And so I'm just like listening to her tracks and she's just telling me about my identity breakthrough, you know, like this is your big deal identity. And I'm like, fuck yeah, it is. I am a big fucking deal, you know. So identity work.
Okay.
We're not really in a coaching setting. We shouldn't really be working with things that would be considered clinical diagnoses.
Sure.
Unless you are partnering with a clinician. Like, let's say that, because there is a whole section of trained hypnotists who work with various kind of behavioral issues. Mm. That they may not be licensed mental health providers,
sure.
right? And in that case, like let's say a psychiatrist, a doc, a therapist might partner with a hypnotist when they're like, hey, my client needs a little help with sleep or with this or with that. And then that way they can kind of collaborate and the hypnotist can kind of stay within their wheelhouse if they're not like a licensed clinician.
I think of Melissa Tears. She often talked about most of her referrals came from a psychiatrist.
Right.
And he was sending people to her specifically for sleep insomnia.
And that's where, again, like y'all, it's not about what is your credential.
No.
It's about like, what is your skill set?
Yes.
What do you bring? And as long as you're respecting that scope of practice, there could be people who would be, you know, way more effective with certain issues, and they're not a licensed clinician.
Heard.
You know? Okay. Myth busting.
Sure.
You are not unconscious during hypnosis. So you will, you know, remember what is happening because to some degree your conscious mind is very much still online. Mm-hmm. It is not mind control. It is a collaborative guided process. So the suggestions that the hypnotist is giving are things that you are saying that you want.
Yes. Right?
You can come out of trance at any time, and that doesn't even necessarily disrupt the process, no. Right? It's kind of like we're like, and, you know, as you hear that siren go by, you just become even more relaxed, right? So even if you come out of trance for a little bit, you got to sneeze, you got to whatever, you actually can drop right in.
Yep.
And then, you know, don't stress out about that you're, oh, God, I'm going to, like, reveal my deepest, darkest secrets.
I get
like,
that again, one a lot, yeah.
Your conscious mind is still online.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think most of the other myth-busting thing is this is all just woo. Mm-hmm. This is all just woo-woo. And I'm like, baby, we have the receipts.
We have
this
the science.
This science backs it up, mama. So I threw down a few studies. I'll just kind of, and we'll link all of these in the show notes. There is so much research out there, like we've been talking about, for different medical and mental health-oriented things. So I pulled this 2019 meta-analysis. This was 85 controlled trials, so almost, you know, around 3,500 people, and they found that hypnosis produced a moderate to large analgesic. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
So it's like I always see that
pain,
word.
Like the pain. Like almost an anesthetic.
Yes.
Kind of, right?
The analgesic effect on pain outcomes. So something that I do whenever I go get a piercing, I put myself in trance.
I love that.
Bless the girl at Studs. The last time she was like, hey, are you okay, girl? Hey, girl, are you okay? Are you feeling okay, girl? And I was just like, and at one point I'm like looking at a spot on the ceiling and I was like, yeah, girl, I'm feeling great. Because I wasn't feeling shit. I felt great. So for, yeah, another one for chronic and clinical pain, a review of trials shows hypnosis consistently reduces pain more than no treatment or some non-hypnotic interventions. This is from PubMed. Yeah. Really a big one that I was finding with different studies is for IBS. Yeah. Again, that mind gut and the Valerie and I went to a training in Arlington with the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis in February of this year. And one of the guys there, his whole, I think he had an MD. I can't remember, but his whole spiel is it's GI psychology.
Yes.
That was his website.
Yeah.
And so he does all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. So this meta-analysis from 2014 randomized different trials and showed hypnotherapy significantly improved abdominal pain and overall GI symptoms, which is really, really cool for IBS. More just, you know, gut-directed hypnotherapy. It's real, releasing those symptom burdens. So, I mean, I could go on and on about all these different studies and what it's like for setting up for childbirth or any of those things. But hypnosis does work by recalibrating how your brain interprets pain and body signals. Again, shifting that attention. And a lot of it is calming down those physiological stress responses. You are tapping into your nervous system. If you need nervous system work, hypnosis is for you. I don't care.
I don't care.
I don't fucking care. I'm like, let's do some bilateral stimulation.
Yes.
So again, and even how we can apply this to memories or memory reconsolidation, trauma memories, it doesn't rewrite reality. We can't change what happened. We can't change a lot of these medical things that happen to us when we're already in the symptoms of it. But it can help your brain and body reinterpret things from that nervous system standpoint in a less threatening way. So this is why people report less pain, less gut stress, sometimes less anxiety after, you know, having hypnotherapy. And the data is certainly backing those shifts up, which is really, really cool.
Right. And, you know, keep in mind that those clinical studies are done with like a pretty specific protocol because otherwise, you know, you can't collect good data.
No.
So this is not just like casual YouTube watching is improving people's pain. Now, it might improve your pain some.
Yes.
But working with a skilled practitioner is going to be more what's going to get you those kinds of results when you've got actual like real, you know, psychological or medical issues that you're wanting to work on.
Yes. You're having a specific amount of sessions.
Yep.
Sometimes things are done one-to-one. They're done in groups. Mm-hmm. And you're having specific interventions and you're doing that work at home. You're continuing that work at home with those pattern interrupts or whatever it is.
Right, guided practices, yeah. So as far as who's a good candidate for hypnosis, you know, again, we're talking about sort of the hypnotizability of it all, and there's the Spiegel eye roll test and like these things that,
you know, I kind of take with a grain of salt because, again, like, and I can't remember, there was someone who said something about the Spiegel eye roll of just like, you know, we have to consider the limitations of research settings.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, maybe that's valid in some ways, but even if you Google and do the Spiegel eye roll test and you're like, oh, it said I wasn't hypnotizable, like, don't fret, right? Because you might be, maybe you're less hypnotizable than somebody else, but that doesn't mean you're not going to have some benefits. I think almost every single person can have some benefits. You do have to be able to focus your attention a little bit, sure, even briefly, but, you know, even a lot of folks with ADHD, yeah, or just general, you know, anxiety, have difficulty. We've had good experiences with them, especially when we sort of take that time to really walk them through that sort of grounding and relaxation.
Yes.
And knowing that, like, okay, even if your brain, you know, even if you're still having thoughts pop up, that's not necessarily wrong, no, or bad. So, you know, that focused attention is something that you can continue to build that muscle of. You got to be a little willing to experiment, right? Because maybe the first thing that you try isn't going to resonate. And to some degree, if at that point you're like, oh, this isn't for me,
yep,
then, like, yeah, you're just closing yourself off. You're closing the door on that. So, you know, you just have to be willing, right? And yes, be willing and be curious, especially if you do enjoy guided practices, like meditative practices with imagery. You'll probably enjoy hypnosis. If you want to access deeper self-awareness and the wisdom within your body, this is really good because, again, like, that mind-body connection, mm-hmm, and that's why those people are experiencing, like, improvements in their gut or their pain. And you got to be comfortable with some degree of vulnerability, of course, because we're sort of, like, dropping a little bit of that, you know, conscious, logical mind. It can be helpful with overthinking, anxiety, sleep trouble, self-doubt, habit change, feeling disconnected from your body or your intuition. Who might not be the best candidate, who might need modification? Folks who are experiencing psychosis, certainly if they're currently in a psychotic episode, we, yes, wouldn't really recommend that. No. Dissociative disorders, unless a clinician is highly specialized in that. People who fear loss of control, it can be worked with. It just might take a little more time.
Yeah.
Right. And anyone who's expecting it to be a magic bullet, magic cure, then, you know, you're probably not going to experience that expectation being met quickly. Mm-hmm. And then, again, if you shut off to the process. So just, you know, moderate your expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with that, you know, the expectations kind of goes into, like, what is this going to feel like? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think back to our step into my office. Yeah. Oh, is it supposed to be like this crazy shit that happens in the movie? So most normal experiences reported, and I think we can, you know, in our own experiences of doing trance and then with clients, mm-hmm, heavy or floaty body sensations. I have people say, I feel deeply relaxed. And you know what that means.
Right.
For you, not to sound like a hypnotist, but it's true. So yeah, so some of that vivid or fuzzy imagery, like Valerie was saying, that hyper, you know, focus on a flame and then everything in the periphery kind of melts. So a dream adjacent state. If you're sleeping during hypnosis, you're not in hypnosis, babe. You're asleep. So I'm a snap and say, and you're gonna hear my voice getting louder, because get up. But I'll bring you up gently, I promise. So dream adjacent, yeah, we can feel like we have all of these different visualizations, and everyone has a different relationship to that. Some people are seeing themselves in a picture, or other people aren't seeing it in that way, but you're feeling something happening, or you think you're having, you know, you're seeing something. So everyone's trance shows up so differently. And I think one of the greatest things that people always get really surprised by, especially the first or a couple of times they do trance, is time distortion. Ooh. Now, as a hypnotist, this is something that I have to keep an eye on because I do all my sessions in 50 minutes. And so sometimes I'm like, fuck.
Time was distorting for me too.
Babe, I'm in trance with you, you know? So right. One of my favorite, you know, if you're new to hypnosis with me, that's really one of the first questions I always like to ask. How long do you think you were in trance for? Uh-huh. And everyone's always like, oh, I mean, yeah, like 5 minutes. And I'm like, yeah, it was 25. And so that's a really, really fun thing. Time does distort for the person experiencing it, for the hypnotist as well. And yeah, just really wanted to, everyone's trance shows up differently. Some people really could be hitting all of those things that I just mentioned, or they stay. I have some people that really hang out. You know, they're not slumped. I have people that slump, and then I have people that are more upright and they're not looking around. Their eyes are soft, but their eyes are open and we are talking the whole time. But it doesn't mean that they're not in some kind of trance or getting those benefits.
Yep.
So it's not a one size fits all. Please know that the right person that you work with and or, you know, trying to figure this out with yourself, it can look different for everybody. Mm-hmm. So that's for real. Hypnosis isn't some mystical brain hacking wizardry, but it kind of is. But this is just your mind doing what it already does, which is focus, imagine, regulate, sustain attention, but in a more intentional, science-supported way with a bit of woo, because why not? Fuck it. The studies aren't saying that hypnosis will turn you into a totally different human, so we have to get that clear, but studies are showing that it does help your brain chill out, reinterpret what's happening in your body, access those really vital inner resources that are usually just buried under stress, anxiety, trauma, or 57 competing thoughts from that prefrontal cortex. So this can be feel magical, but it is not magic, and it is certainly not mind control if you're doing it ethically. This is just one more really cool way we can partner with our nervous system to aid healing, self-discovery, and a lot of compassion.
And now, our musical segment. Now that's what I call...
Okay.
Where Emerson and I each share a song with each other each week as representatives of our respective generations. We tell you a little bit about the song or artist, and then we press pause, we share the song with each other, and then we come back for our live reactions. And we're capturing it all on a Spotify playlist linked in the show notes for you.
All right, and now it's time for our musical segment. Now that's what I call
Okay,
where we share a tune, often from our respective generations, not always, and we tell you a little bit about the song. You can find it on our Spotify playlist, and then we do a live listen, and then come back and share our thoughts.
Heck yeah. So I wanted to challenge us a little bit this week. So I wanted us to find a song that uses the word hypnotize or hypnotized. Something about hypnosis in general or about being in trance or under spell. Anything with just like altering the mind. Yeah. So, of course, I chose Hypnotized by the Notorious B.I.G. Biggie.
Straight we're getting out of my generation, sort of.
Funny. I mean, sure. X. I was not alive. Yeah. So this isn't, but this is just the felt like the perfect one. So Hypnotized was released in 1997. Baby, I was not a thought yet. I was a 99er. So this is on the album that came out, I didn't even know this, 5 days before his murder, which is tough on a queen.
Oh, shit.
So this song entered the Billboard Hot 100 at number 2, baby. This song is, I mean, who doesn't know this song? It's all about lavish lifestyle, not being a brokey, iconic song, iconic guy. There's so much fucking lore. This is very timely with Curtis 50 Cent Jackson's documentary that's coming out all about P. Diddy, the West Coast, East Coast rivalry. So it's a really, really interesting time and goes into all music history. So I'm excited to get a little jiggy with Biggie.
Guys, we just watched a short film.
No, I was like, we're in trance. Like watching this fucking music. It's very detailed.
It is.
There's so much going on.
Recommend that you watch the music video.
Shout out Biggie Smalls. Don't love that P. Diddy was there and produced the whole track, but like, okay, interesting.
It was very interesting. I enjoyed it.
I'm so curious of how we're going to now listen to yours.
I know. Okay, so...
different vibe.
I chose Hypnotized by System of a Down.
Mm.
So in case anyone doesn't know, they are an Armenian-American heavy metal band formed in California in 94.
Ooh.
And all of their members are of Armenian descent, either born to American immigrants or immigrants themselves. Mm. This is the title track from their 2005 album, and this song reached number one on Billboard's Alternative Songs chart.
Ooh.
It is a critique of societal manipulation, media propaganda, and government control, political control, the powerful forces that hypnotize the masses.
Mm.
So how we get lulled into complacency and the simplicity of the chorus kind of highlighting how our everyday life just kind of marches on amidst all this systemic manipulation.
Ooh, how timely.
I know.
So let's discuss the 90s music videos needing a fucking helicopter all the time. What is that about?
We just got a lot of helicopters in both of those videos.
I mean, wow. And I say this every time, but I grieve not being like one of those girlies in the crowd that's like, you know, in the like late 90s, early 2000s. Like I'm like going to a concert and I have like ugly low-rise jeans on and like a weird haircut. Uh-huh. And I'm like, and I'm just like being thrown around a mosh pit. And then
and
after.
There's not a single cell phone to be seen.
Not a single cell phone in sight. And after, I'm like on my pink, like, what am I doing? I'm on like my pink,
your
like,
landline.
Like, yeah, my landline. And I'm like, oh my God, can you believe like Jeremy came or whatever? You know, I'm like, I grieve that.
I agree with that for you. I mean, I wasn't of age and time, but yeah.
Oh my God.
Welcome to the segment, Wait, What? Where I fill Val in on all of the internet vernacular and lore so that she doesn't end up being an irrelevant elder millennial.
What the fuck is a face card?
Okay, so a face card is when someone is snatched.
Okay.
So like, face card could be like you put on a full beat, so like
a
you
full
know,
beat,
yeah,
full face of makeup,
full face of makeup, full okay. beat, you know, girl. So you know, you could be like, oh my God, face card, oh my God, face card, it's giving.
Okay.
Or it's someone just like has a face card because they're stunning.
Okay.
So you could say, or you could hear, oh, face card never declines. So,
whoa.
It's basically, you know, it can call on a little bit of, like, pretty privilege, how that yeah. opens the doors sure. for you. Or, yeah, like, the face card never declines. So, like, yeah. in the way where it's, like, a credit card where it's endless, you know, you can get endless props for looking beat or looking beautiful. So, it's, like, a okay. great compliment to give someone, oh, my God, face cards.
Okay, so if I see someone and I want to compliment their face, I can just go... face card.
Oh God, face card. Or okay. But I love, oh my God, face card never declines. Because that's even saucier, you know?
Oh my God, that's fun. Okay, listeners, let's try it out. Let's give it a shot.
Yes.
And now for our last segment of the show, welcome to Fire Dumpster Phoenix. It is rough out there, y'all, and we need all the hope we can get. It's time to go dumpster diving for some positive news and rise from the leftover Happy Meal ashes together.
So I keep be bringing these stories of hero dogs.
Me too.
We both have fucking hero dogs today. So mine is this dog in Pittsburgh. This guy, Gary, was walking in this Pittsburgh park with his own dog, and this pit bull kept like frantically, like really trying to get his attention. He's like, it kept coming back to me and like was clearly in distress, but he like, you know, wasn't like, you know, just coming over for a pet, right? And
yeah.
so the dog was really persistent and then led this man. Gary's like, okay, hold on. Like, let me leave my dog with my friend over here. I'm going to follow this pit bull.
Mm-hmm.
Pit bull leads him to a couch where a man and woman were both lying unresponsive. And so he calls 911. The medics get there quickly, but then it did not end there because Gary, who at that point had been 16 months sober from heroin addiction himself, felt this deep responsibility toward the pit bull who had orchestrated this rescue. So when animal control came and they told him that the dog was going to be taken to this shelter really far out of the city, and Gary was like, well, I don't know that these owners are going to be able to get their pet after, you know, how far away it is and all the fees. So he offered to foster the dog himself until his humans were well enough to reunite with them, which is so sweet. And I will say, listeners, like, I know that those of us who are animal lovers, dog lovers, especially, we might feel sad when we see a dog with an unhoused person and
sure.
worry about the dog's welfare. And like, that is totally okay. Like, especially we know it's really cold or, you know, when someone may be like actively using, we worry about that dog's well-being. And I read the most fabulous article. It was the cover story for the Monitor last week about homelessness and pets. So look at the Monitor for that story too. It really opened my eyes and my heart of like, yeah, there are times where we need to intervene. But for the most part, like these are these people's family members.
Oh, my God.
Most of them are taking care of them like they were their own children.
Yes.
Like, you know, so it just, yeah, opened my heart.
Well, and like gives hope and like company in such like isolating times. Like I can, I'm the same. Like I get worried and then I'm like, well.
And there are a lot of cities where like in the city they were highlighting, which I forget where it was, but they were talking about how like this woman has a nonprofit and like that's what she does.
Yes.
She drives around giving, you know, little jackets, aww, leashes, tarps, like she, you know, supplies to keep both people or both the person and the dog safe.
Yeah.
So that they can stay together.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. Okay. I have a little doggy too. His name is Dennis. And he's blind and deaf. So he was found abandoned in a trash can in England.
Fuck right off.
He was 4 pounds. He rushed to the vet. He had like significant wounds. He had to be treated for malnourishment. And the vet and, like, the staff were just saying, like, they were, like, they couldn't believe how little this dog was. They were, like, he's so tiny. We can't do, like, regular puppy stuff with him because he was so frightened. Like, he couldn't even take a bath at first. They were having to just, like, wipe him down. And he was so scared. And then, of course, over time, they were, like, oh my God. Like, he's blind and deaf. And so they were really trying to, like, do so much work with this little guy to, like, get him comfortable, get him feeling, like, less scared. And so they were just, like, really helping him learn and pick up on certain cues. So, like, they were talking about, like, okay, we were kind of, like, making sure we were, like, walking with, like, a heavy foot and kind of trying to be in his vicinity before we picked him up because he would just be so frightened, poor thing. So they managed to get him into a foster home, and they were talking about how he just, like, really resilient, this little resilient little guy. He's, like, running into stuff, and then he's, like, okay. And the next time, he was kind of, like, avoiding the thing that he ran into. So he's so smart, and they just talked about how over time, like, they were just, like, then starting to see his personality. I was, like, writing this, and I was, like, Dennis! But he has his foster home placement, and he will be adopted in time for Christmas!
Oh, good.
Which just made me so sob when I read this the other day.
What a lucky family. What a lucky boy.
So Widow Dennis, you know, we'll obviously, we always link these for you all to go read, but, like, the little picture of him, he's so widow. So we love doggies.
Amazing.
Here on But For Real.
All right, listeners, that's all we got for you this week.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.
This has been another episode of But For Real, produced by Valerie Martin and Emerson Ryder, and edited by Sean Conklin.
But For Real is a Gaia Center production. The Gaia Center offers individual, couples, and group therapy for clients across Tennessee and in person in our Nashville office, as well as coaching for clients worldwide. For show notes or to learn more about our work, visit GaiaCenter.co or find us on Instagram at the Gaia Center and at But For Real Pod.
But For Real is intended for education and entertainment and is not a substitute for mental health treatment.
Also, since we host this podcast primarily as humans rather than clinicians, we are not shy here about sharing our opinions on everything from snacks and movies to politicians and social issues.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode.
See you next time, bestie.